Go ahead, we're now recording.
Thank you very much, Ricardo. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the UDRP Domain Name Rock Working Group on the 6th of June 2013. On the call today, we have Michele Nalen, Lisa Galano, Hugo De Fowler, Matt Schneller, Alan Greenberg, Faisal Shah, and Christine Durain. We have apologies from David Maher, Laurie Anderson, Gabriela Schlack, Peter Lehrman, and Volker Gleiman. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs, Lars Hoffman, Barry Cobb, and myself, Matthew Terrigan. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Michele.
Thank you. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good whatever other time of day it is. And welcome to the wonderful world of UDRP Lock. Yay! Okay, as per standard, I have to ask, does anybody have any updates to their statement of interests? And I will just state for the record that as of today, I am now the chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group, which doesn't really change my interests that much, but just so you're aware. Christine, I believe, is still having issues getting onto the phone bridge.
Just got on. Thanks.
Oh, you're in. Okay. Hi. Good morning.
Hello.
Or good afternoon or whatever time. Okay. Super Marika sent out a survey to try and get the group's temperature. For the record, as the chair, I decided to take my stance as Switzerland or Ireland, both neutral countries, and not express any opinion and keep out of it. So I did not vote in it, but quite a few other people did. So, Marika, would you like to walk us through that?
Sure. This is Marika. So what you see on the screen is a very quick report of the survey, which I just put together before this call, because we had several people that that sent in their votes relatively shortly before the call started. So we received in total 8 responses, 7 from working group members and 1 from Phil Corrin. And just to note that I don't think he's a member of the working group currently, but I think he's the main reason why we're actually looking into this issue, because on behalf of his organization, he filed the comment that the working group should consider this loss of informal response time. His opinion is also noted in this poll. So what you see on the screen is basically the aggregation of those responses received, and if after this call people want as well to see the individual feedback or have this sliced or diced in a different way, we can definitely look at that. But as I understand the poll as it currently stands, is that most people prefer the first option that's up on the screen, that is participating UDRP respondents be granted an express option to request a 4-day extension, should they so choose. With any such received 4-day extension request to be automatically granted, and I think we know the rest of the line. So that's the number one preferred option. The number two is the one to extend with 4 days. The number three is no change is made, but UDRP providers are required to inform the respondents that they have the option to request for an extension. And the last preferred option is to change the working group recommendations and no longer make this a recommendation to remove the requirement for the complainant to notify the respondent at the time of filing. I just thought it may be worth as well pointing out that, because I looked at the individual responses, and I said, as Phil Corrin is the person that actually filed his comment in relation to this, he actually chose as well the option that is currently the preferred option for those that responded to the poll as his first option in the poll. So I don't know if you, Michele, if you want to take it question by question, or you want me already to cover as well the next one, or you first want to maybe come
let's
to...
Let's just pause for a second. Let's take deep breaths and relax and not get too carried away. Okay, so based on this then, the most popular option of with those who expressed an option is the 4-day extension thing. So does anybody have any comments at this juncture?
It's me, I do it.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I just filled out my survey, so my answers are not there. I suspect that changes the results. Marika, I'm having trouble parsing what's on the screen. We have 3 questions on the screen. What happened to the fourth? Maybe I'm confused, but
which fourth question?
I only see four options. Three options. There
if you scroll down, you see the fourth option. It comes on the next page. And as I understand, the poll has actually listed them in the order of preference. So if you see the rating average, it means that the first option you see there actually got the 1.88 rating average. So
oh, okay. Sorry. It got labeled number two for some reason. Oh, they're both labeled number two. Okay.
I'm not really sure where you're looking.
Oh. At the top of the second page, it says number two. So I assume that was the second survey question. But
it was. The first survey question was your name.
Yeah, I know. I figured that. I just figured it out. Thank you. All right. I ranked them 1, 2, 3, 4, so I think that changes the...
I'm just looking at the survey results, the updated one, and it's actually not changed. It's now that one is still the preferred option with a 1.9 rating average. So I think
okay.
It weighs the option how many people chose as their first
option. Okay, this is a weighted option.
Yes. I guess what we did is basically give people an order of preference to really try to determine where the balance of the votes lies. It's not the most people that voted for one or the option, but it's really looking at the first preference, second preference, and on the basis of that, because I think as we discussed in last meeting, just because something has the most votes doesn't necessarily mean that overall, looking at the options, it's the preferred option. So that's what this poll has done.
Now I understand what you're saying. Okay.
So even with your vote, that one still comes up as the preferred option based on the or how people have ranked their responses.
Yeah, I have a problem with that kind of weighting because it may mean that everyone gets something they didn't really want, but the weighting ends up forcing it. But anyway.
Well, I guess part of the question, and this is Marika, is whether this is an option that people can live with. Because I think as we're looking at, this is always a compromise or consensus model, looking at the different option, is this an option that people feel may not be their preferred option, but does address the concerns that have been raised and is not something people cannot live with?
Okay, I see Mass and then Alan again. Matt?
It looks like... Sorry, I was trying to figure out. My phone died last week, so I have a new one. I was trying to figure out how to unmute this sucker. Looks like the item that came out as number one in the voting had as many first-place votes as any other and second-most second-place votes. I thought it was also a little interesting that that nobody thought this was the worst option out there. Had no fourth place votes, which maybe is a good sign for this being something everyone can live with, that all the votes were distributed north of this being a deal killer.
Alan?
I guess I'll stand by my original comment of regardless of which ones we recommend, there's enough of a split that I think the report has to make clear what the options are, so we solicit input from the community on the on this one. We shouldn't just pick one and silently eliminate the others. I mean, we can pick one, but I think we need, a comment on it and present at least what the second runner-up option was, or something like that.
So Alan, just kind of thinking out loud here. So something like, say, we after discussions in the group, the most popular solution was X. However, we also considered Y and Z or something.
Well, and point out that it was close. It wasn't a slam dunk decision. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing that. But if the first decision is to allow them to request a free 4-day extension, then we should present at least the second option, that might have won or is close, and solicit input on that, something like that.
Marika's been waving her hand crazily for the last couple of minutes. Go ahead, Marika.
That isn't Rick. I first actually took my hand down, and then, but now I put it back up. Just to note as well, and it's something that Christine pointed out in the comments as well, that you know, we did have, you know, not all working group members voted. So maybe a next step may be to actually put this out on the list and saying, look, these are the results of the poll. You know, based on the poll and what we discussed in the call, you know, the working group is considering, you know, including the following in the report, and that can be then along the lines of what Alan said, you know, the working group, you know, following public, the review of public comments, the working group considered this issue and considered the four different options. And we can even, you know, include the result or refer to the results of the poll, saying, you know, based on that, you know, this is the compromise position that was reached, noting that there were others that were considered too, and basically put that out to the list to see if there's any further feedback or comments on that, and hopefully be able at the next call to decide, okay, let's move forward with this approach and include that in the report as is.
Matt? Matt, is that an old hand? Oh, it's gone, okay.
Yeah, and basically, this is Marika. I think Matt noted as well, because looking at the results now, it's actually the automatic or the four-day extension is not even, because I see now as well that the poll has actually not ranked them in order. So what we need to do is to look at the rating average, and actually the second preferred option is the no changes made to the current recommendations regarding timing, but UDRP providers are required to inform the respondent at the moment of notification of a commencement with the additional, because I think actually two people have voted since I actually did the report, and I need to check back who the other person is. But so the
Marika, can you, Marika, this, you used SurveyMonkey for this, didn't you?
Yes.
Can you get it to spit out the chart thing instead, which might be a bit easier to understand? There's a charting option. There's a charting option for the results.
Let me see if that.
Which will might be easier to understand than this kind of waiting thing, which, to be perfectly frank, I'm finding quite confusing.
Hold on, because I'll need to convert it to PDF. It's a bit confusing. I think even looking at the chart, it's actually the one that's lowest is the most popular one, basically. So it's not the typical chart where it's the one that's highest rated that gets the is the preferred option. Let me see if I can.
So just for clarity here, what was the I'm getting more confused the more I look at these numbers. What was the order that the SurveyMonkey said we prefer? Or
you're saying what the outcome was of the vote?
Yeah.
So basically, the number one option there says that it has a rating average of 1.88. So basically, you see that. At least
okay.
What's up on the screen now, three people chose it as the first option, two people, or three people chose it as their second option.
Okay.
Two people chose it as their third option. And then if you look down, it has done it in a similar way. So you basically need to look at the rating average to make the ranking. You know, as I said, I did it just before the call, so I'm sure there's a better way of doing it. And let me now pull up the chart that works that may make it clear or may confuse you even more. You have to look sideways because for some reason it doesn't want to take it. Let me try this.
Okay,
try this again.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
Now that's a lot clearer.
So basically, I think the way you need to read this chart is in that the orange one on the left is the preferred because it was the highest ranked
so
by most.
That's the one that a free four-day if you ask.
Yes. So the number two is that no changes made. The purple one, the number three here on the chart, is the number three where basically no changes made to the recommendation, but when UDRP providers send their notification to the respondent, they include the information on how they can request an extension. Then the third preferred option is the blue one, which is the adding of the 4 days to the response time for everyone. No need to ask. It's just a standard option. And then the least preferred option is the red column on the right, is to change the working group's recommendation, actually no longer require this notification at the time of filing. Or no, to actually re-require that, so no longer
remove the recommendation.
Exactly. And I think, as Matt says in the chat, closer to one, number one is the closer to the group's aggregate first preference.
Anybody have any other thoughts on this at the moment?
Only the one I stated before, that I look at these kind of waiting schemes with some care, because you can end up having selecting by it something that no one really wants as the first option. So, or very few people really want as the first option. So I say use these grading schemes with care.
Okay.
Although, for whatever it's worth, this did look like this was the co-first option among number one votes.
Yeah, but only a very small number of people actually voted. It was not too representative either. I mean, Marika, how many people are actually in the group and how many voted in total as of this very minute?
This is Marika. I'm just trying to see, because we just had Alan and Lisa both submitted their votes that weren't in the report that was initially on, but that is recorded in the chart that you see up on the screen now. I think to note, looking at the working group members, we do have a whole lot of more members, but I think if you look at the names of the people that voted, I think those are the ones that regularly participate. I think one person probably absent is David Roche Turner. I'm just looking through the list of people that actually show up for the calls, but I think most of the other people that do tend to participate seem to have put in their votes. If I scroll through the list of members, and I can copy the list of members.
I will note, for reasons I won't go into here, the working group rules very specifically say you have to involve everyone on the mailing list. You cannot make decisions on a call.
Right, exactly.
That was done on the request of one person, but nevertheless it ended up in the rules.
Yeah, and this is Marika, so that's exactly why I made the suggestion to put what we discussed now on the mailing list, saying that, well, based on the survey results, this seems to be the preferred option, although it may not be, you know, the number one option for all, but this is something people can live with, and, you know, we will record that in the report, you know, the other options that were considered in order to address the comments received. As said, I think it is, you know, worth, as part of that conversation, to take into account that the person or the organization that actually made the comment seems to agree with what currently comes out as the first ranked option. So at least from their perspective, hopefully addresses their initial concern that was expressed as in response to the initial report.
Yeah, I have only one question at this point. Do both of the providers on this call say that's something they could implement without undue not effort, but, you know, that's something which is reasonable. It's not going to put an undue burden on them.
Just to be clear, this is Christine. You're talking about option one, right?
I'm talking about the one that ended up the best.
Yes. I can't speak for WIPO, but it's certainly something we could implement without a whole heck of a lot of hassle on this end.
Okay. Good.
I do know that that wasn't my first choice, however.
I think David said something similar in the last call. I think he said that it was a matter of a supplemental rule thing on their end that they could do without too much of a hassle or issue. I don't think it was David's first choice either, but I think he came out in the same place.
And this is Marika, if I can add, because this is actually the proposed option comes actually from David, and I think in his email he originally expressed indeed that his preferred option is the purple one. The, you know, no changes made, but the options are expressed in the email that's sent by the UDRP provider. But I think as part of the email said, well, if people still feel that there should be an option for an automatic extension, maybe this is another alternative to be considered. So it's actually something that was proposed by David as a, I think, a kind of compromise, a possible compromise position between the two options of saying we automatically add 4 days for everyone, or, you know, we don't do anything at this stage. So I think that's where it originally came from.
Sounds like we have a way forward.
Christine has her hand up.
Christine from NAF. I just wanted to make it clear and point out that while, you know, I think David came up with the idea as an alternative, and we don't oppose it as an alternative, just to be clear that this will require a change to the UDRP, because there are two other providers not on the call that this change will have to be forced upon, and then if any other providers in the future are accredited, they will also have to do it. So therefore, I mean, while we and WIPO can say, oh yeah, we'll just make a change to our SEP rules, don't worry about it, that doesn't cover the rest of the providers and any future potential providers. So, and I know that our group has, you know, kind of worried in the past about, you know, making too many changes to UDRP is, you know, not really in our scope. So just be thinking that, you know, when we make our recommendation, we're going to have to be clear that it is going to require an additional change to the UDRP itself.
Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just wanted to know that I did have a chat already with my colleagues on, you know, discussing on how potential implementation would go forward. And I think what they've said at this stage that it's probably better for the working group just to focus on what it is they want to achieve and maybe focus less on what that requires so that can actually be considered as part of the implementation. Because I think, you know, what we want to try to avoid as well, that we don't make certain recommendations because we don't want it to be implemented in a certain way or another way, or concerned or how it may be implemented, but maybe that's something that is better considered once the working group says, well, this is what we want to achieve as an outcome that we then can consider as part of the implementation process. This is the best way on achieving that result. Whether that, you know, requires a change to the rules, or whether that is done in the form of an advisory, or whether that's done in through another mechanism. But I think we may otherwise get distracted by implementation considerations and not actually focus on what it is that we're trying to achieve with our recommendations.
Matt's suggesting, couldn't it be pushed out as a supplemental rule change? If ICANN strongly asks all providers to update the supplemental rules, it seems like it'll happen. And then I have Alan in the queue.
Yeah, since the complainant selects the forum and not the respondent, that would end up with the ability of the complainant forum shopping and picking the one that doesn't allow the extra extension. So if we're trying to affect the option for the respondent of having the extra extension, I think it would have to be, our recommendation has to be worded in such a way that it would be mandatory. How it's implemented is, you know, probably ends up being a UDRP change, but otherwise we're adding the 4 days to make sure respondents who want to access it, who want to answer, can get it. And not having it as a formal rule would eliminate that option potentially. So I think we'd have to be careful about that.
Okay. Thanks, Alan.
If it was the other way around and the respondent gets to pick the form, then it wouldn't be an issue. But that's not the way it works.
Okay. Anybody else? No. So go ahead.
Sorry, this is Matt. Just one quick comment. You know, we have, unlike with the registrars, we have a pretty finite group of providers. Even though, you know, it's a group that can expand. It's a slow process, as the Arab Center has found out, and it's slow slog towards accreditation. I mean, I guess we could just reach out to the Czech and Arab centers to verify that they would do something like a supplemental rule update. Because at that point, we'd basically have input from everybody if that's going to be our ultimate recommendation.
Anybody else? Alan, I'll go back to you since you're still there. My hand waving.
I'm not at my computer right now, and I left my hand up by mistake. Sorry.
So you're wandering around the house.
I need a second cup of coffee.
That's understandable. That's why we all, why headsets were invented. Okay. The other question that we were asking in the survey, Marika.
Yes, let me get that up. Although I may need to look actually at the screen because presumably as well the additional votes may have changed this. So based on what I received half an hour before the call, the question relates to the settlement procedure. So in this initial one, it was six people preferred the option A and one person preferred the option B. I think we did get some comments here as well, someone saying that in number four, we're in favor of option A, while with the clarification that the registrar makes a change and the domain name remains locked until the dismissal is issued and processed by the registrar. There's also a needs to be a time limit on implementing the settlement order and unlocking after dismissal. And option C or A are much better than B. Let me just quickly check on my screen if this has significantly changed based on the votes that we received during the call. If you bear with me. Basically has changed. It's now 8-1, so 88.9% prefer option A. So it seems to be very clear support for the option A, and maybe the group is willing to consider them doing the same thing as we did with the other one, just putting this out on a list, saying based on the survey results and the discussions on the call, the working group is considering supporting this option and including that as part of their recommendations. Are there any objections?
It's Alan. If I may, I had trouble, and admittedly I was only partway through my first cup of coffee. I had trouble parsing them, but I think option A says the provider makes the decision on whether it is settled or not, and option B puts that decision process in the registrar's hand. Is that correct?
This is Marika. If I recall the discussion as well, I think option B is basically what currently happens. I think option A is indeed where, and I think it's something that especially registrars requested or advocated for, that is actually the provider that indeed informs the registrar what needs
right
to happen.
So the registrar doesn't have to make value judgments on whether the two parties are lying or whether they're dealing with the correct people or whatever. They simply take instructions from the provider, even if it's a settlement instead of a judgment. And I think if we're going to present multiple options in the report, we need to make it clear of what the effect is of the sequence of words we have there. Because on a quick reading, it isn't obvious.
Anybody else? Deathly silence.
It's Alan. If we're going to go to the list again on this one like we did on the other one, like we said we would in the other one, I think the message is that of those who answered the survey, there was overwhelming support of option A over B. Does anyone disagree? You know, is there any reason why we shouldn't simply go with it and not present multiple options in the report? Unlike the first one, this one seems to have a very marked preference within the group who did answer.
Okay. Sorry if there's any kind of noise here. I've got builders in downstairs bashing and banging with data centers and coffee rooms and God knows what else. So if you hear loud noises, it's just that. Okay, so Marika, well, maybe what the best thing to do then is as suggested by Alan, that we go back to the main list for the second question. Those who have responded, it's pretty clear what way that's going. For the other one, obviously, it's not as clear. But let's just see if we can get more people to express some kind of opinion, and then move on from there. Anything else on this?
Yeah, this is Christine. Can I say something?
Sure, go ahead.
Christine from NAF. I just wanted to make it clear, and I'm not going to beat the dead horse, that I think this is a terrible solution. But I just wanted to again make awareness that this is going to affect all the providers if you require us to change the rules and change how we do stays and somehow start to get involved with, being in the middle of parties' discussions and needs to settle and suspend. So it's not just WIPO and NAF. It's going to affect all the providers.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, it's Alan. I can't put my hand up right now. I have a question for Christine. I think I understood that, but that sounds like a better solution than having a large set of registrars, some of whom may be inexperienced, trying to take that same set of responsibilities.
Well, how do the registrars transfer a domain name now? I mean, does the registrar get involved with it at all now? I mean, if there's not a UDRP, is it because of the lock that this is even an issue?
Well, I'm
transferring in what sense, Christine? Could you please clarify?
Well, I mean, if you want to give a domain name to somebody else, you can, right?
Who's you?
Well, anybody. You personally. You want to give me a domain name, Michaela? You can give me one, right?
It depends on the domain extension. If it was a .com or a .net, well, yes. If it was a .xxx, no. Or a .cat or other ones.
If I may jump in, it's Alan. I was worried because if you go back to the discussions of, at the beginning of determining exactly who is the respondent because of, privacy services or other things that happen at the beginning of the process, I'm just not sure that in all cases the registrar definitively knows who it is the provider is dealing with.
Apparently, the registrar is the only entity who really knows who the respondent is, because we have to go with the public who is, which is a vast majority of the time wrong, or showing a privacy service. And in some significant number of cases, the privacy service doesn't lift. So we can have, any old respondent show up and say, "Hi, my name is Joe. I own this domain name and I want to settle." Okay, Joe, great. Well, we would assume that the registrar would have some way to authenticate Joe as being actually the owner of the domain name. We have no way to authenticate it. We accept a response from anybody who says they have the domain name and submit it to the panel and let the panel sort it out, based on the credibility of the evidence and that sort of thing. But we have no way of knowing if the person who's responding is really the respondent. The only person who can know that is the registrar.
Okay. I guess I wasn't, in answering the question, I wasn't differentiating between the panel and the provider.
Oh, right. And I don't mean that the panel really gets – I mean, the panel doesn't know much more either. The panel just looks at the pleadings, and they're charged with making an evidentiary finding. Is Joe really the respondent, and can he, make a decision? But, I mean, if the parties agree to suspend a case and the panel hasn't been appointed, it's just going to be me saying, okay, great, go for it. I mean, just so you're aware. I mean, that's fine if that's what the group decides. But the provider has no special knowledge about who their parties are and what the terms of their settlement are. That's completely done outside the UDRP process right now. We agree to stop the process to allow the parties to figure out what they want to do, and then they currently approach the registrar, and presumably the registrar knows who its customer is and will unlock that domain name for its customer so that it can transfer the domain name to the complainant. But we have no way of knowing if the person who's come forward and says, "Yeah, sure, I want to give the domain name away," is actually the customer.
I guess maybe I missed this whole discussion when it was being held. Maybe it was a meeting I missed, or multiple meetings I missed. I guess I if we're going to revisit this, I'd like to hear the other side also, because there seemed to be overwhelming, and even taking my vote out, which clearly wasn't a knowledgeable vote. Why is there such a push for the change then? I will take my hand down and not put it up again.
Matt, go ahead.
And under option A, Christine, wouldn't that one way that the provider could satisfy the process be to essentially say, we have gotten an email from the representative for the complainant, and we have an email from, you know, Jim Beam at jimbeam.com, who's we believe is the respondent. Please verify your records, and if this is correct, the parties have agreed to transfer the domain or delete the domain or whatever, and then it either happens or it doesn't happen. If it doesn't happen, things go forward as though there was no settlement. If it does happen, it's done. And that way the provider doesn't have to make a determination. They just have to say, hey, this is what the parties have told us, or what we believe are the parties have told us. So registrar, if this is enough for you to act on, please act on it.
Yeah, well, right, and I think, Matt, that I think that that's what's going to end up happening. I mean, currently we require for the parties to stay a case or suspend a case for settlement, we require a jointly signed document that they can both electronically sign and email and separately, or they can jointly sign it and fax it in, however they work it out. And then we tell the root registrar, hey, these two people are attempting to settle. If they settle, great, whatever, carry on. So basically, yeah, what you're proposing is probably what would end up happening. We would just get a piece of paper with both signatures on it, tell the registrar, yeah, these two people have already settled, transfer the domain name between them. But I think the concern was that there were people who were thinking that the registrars were going to get some sort of insurance or security or benefit out of this deal, out of having the providers take the extra steps and the extra time to now facilitate the settlement contact with the registrar. But really, you're not getting anything else. The registrars are not getting any extra assurance, because we have absolutely no idea if the person who signed is actually a domain name registrant. And so I just want to make it clear that the registrars are not getting anything extra except a single point of contact.
Matt, anything further? Luke, you've been throwing things into the chat. Would you like to say something on the telephone? And Marika is now absenting herself, and she is passing things over to Mr. Cobb. Oh. Okay, Luke can't speak, so...
Can I just respond to Luke's last comment? Luke said in the chat that it should be the provider who instructs the registrar to unlock, not the registrar on its own. And I just wanted to follow up a little bit with that and just say that that's sort of the purpose of us notifying the registrar of the stay, so that we're saying you can go ahead and unlock if the parties agree. Now, I hear the comment that the registrar doesn't know if the parties have actually settled. And again, the registrar is going to know exactly as much as we're going to know. We're going to get a piece of paper that says, we've settled. We want to unlock and transfer the domain name. Presumably, that's the same piece of paper the registrars have been getting for the past dozen years in stay and transfer cases, is a letter from the parties saying, we've settled, we want to transfer the domain. Again, you're not getting anything else in the process, because that piece of paper that the registrars should have been getting is just going to come from us now instead of the parties themselves. There's not going to be any further validation or verification or any other knowledge on the back of that. So that's just, I mean, I'm just concerned that the registrars think they're getting some extra insurance policy here, and they're not.
Just Luke's just saying he's okay with that. Barry has his hand up, and so does Alan. Since Barry hasn't said a word in ages, I'll let him go first, and then followed by Alan.
Thank you, McKaylee. This is Barry from staff. I think isn't, correct me if I'm wrong, but the primary driver here is once we get to this point in the process, there's an absence of an authoritative source for the process. Once the provider gets the settle that the parties agreed to settle, then the provider is out of it, and essentially, you know, the registrar is really never considered the authority with respect to this process because they're the ones that are waiting for the lock to be applied, and they're the ones that are waiting for the lock to be removed. So that's where it sounds like there's the disconnect here, because otherwise it almost seems to go into a black hole in terms from an authority perspective. And the reason why I bring this up is I'm trying to visualize this process from a swim lane perspective by role. And it seems like when we get to this, there's no swim lane that this would that anybody would own.
I think that there's no. I'm not understanding the swindling comment really. Maybe you want to rephrase, but I just want to comment on nobody really does own the process. The providers are responsible for running through the UDRP process itself. There is no stay or suspension process in the UDRP, but the parties have approached WIPO and NAF in the many years past, and said we want the option to settle. It's not part of the UDRP. It's not part of what the providers do, but we want to be able to settle. So we said, okay, fine. I mean, David Roach Turner's discussed this before, but went to ICANN, got approval from ICANN to allow the parties to settle. But there's no sort of provider oversight because it's not part of the UDRP. It's something that the parties want to do on their own. And so that's why it is really a black hole. It's completely stepping outside the process to go negotiate something off to the side that is really that's really not related. So you're right. It is a total black hole.
Alan, go ahead.
I guess I'll ask a question that may be obvious, but why did it come to us? Why are we discussing it? Someone must have identified a problem.
Can I answer that? This is Christine. I think that it was because when we were talking about the lock, there was concern, and one of the questions had to do with the unlock and how do we make sure that the domain name gets unlocked when it needs to be unlocked. And then it was identified that one of the places and times in which a domain name is unlocked or is in a quasi-lock because it might be unlocked is during the stay or suspension process. And then, of course, as we got into the discussion, there are really no rules around it. It is just kind of the Wild West for the parties stepped out of the process and want to settle. And I think the registrars were like, yes, and we really want some more confirmation that what we're doing is right. And we do, as providers, get a couple questions a year about, what are the parties trying to do? What's the settlement? What am I supposed to do? Somebody please tell me. So, I mean, it does come up. I won't say it's not a problem.
This is Michele. Just to answer that question as well, Alan, as a registrar, once we're in this UDRP process, we are basically at the mercy of the UDRP provider. We can't confidently just allow domains to be unlocked, transferred, change holder, all that kind of thing once this process kicks off. So from a registrar perspective, we want to be told by the UDRP provider it's okay for us to do something. I think that's where Luke and others, where that query came from. I mean, it's from our perspective, what we want is clarity to know that, yes, we're doing what we're meant to do because it's our contract. But don't forget, we registrars have a contract with ICANN. The UDRP providers don't. If the UDRP provider screws up, ICANN is not going to terminate the contract because there is no contract. If I screw up, ICANN can terminate my contract.
But, Michele, I just want to address your comment was we want to know that we can unlock or we're allowed to unlock. Those were your words. And that is the order that you get currently. And I realize you meaning the registrar, you don't have many of these. But when they're currently the process is you get an order saying the parties are about to settle. If they approach you and tell you they've settled, you may unlock.
Yeah, but we want to be 100% sure that they actually have set, that you, the UDRP provider, are 100% happy with that. We don't want a situation arising where somebody represents themselves as being a party to this process, and basically you're the gatekeeper. That's the way some of us would view it.
We're not. I'm telling you, we literally the respondent.
We're not the gatekeepers either. That's the problem. That's where there's a lack of this clarity. This is part of the problem we have with a lot of these processes, is that it's not clear. I don't know who the complainant is, and I don't know who represents a complainant. I have
correct.
No knowledge of them. I have no relationship with them. None.
You know who the respondent is, and that's who we don't know.
No, you do know, because I've told you. I confirm who they are when you ask me.
Well, you might have, but the vast majority of registrars don't.
Well, we're meant to confirm to you, as part of the process, who the respondent is.
Well, you're right. Correct, but
I'm working on the basis that you, whichever UDRP provider it is, has contacted me saying, please confirm XYZ. We confirm XYZ, or correct it, like the most recent UDRP case we had, where UDRP was sent to us for a domain that no longer was registered. So, you know, obviously that was a bit kind of pointless. I have no knowledge of who the complainant is. I have no relationship with them of any kind whatsoever. I don't know. Somebody could turn up and say, hey, I'm representing Company X. I don't know that they're representing Company X. I have no way of knowing that. I have no relationship with them. I'm Alan and then Matt.
Thank you. If I heard correctly, Christine said that they would issue an unlock request to the registrar when they receive a document signed by both parties that there is an intent to settle. Did I hear correctly?
Yes, we don't say to unlock. We say the parties are attempting to settle. You may unlock if they contact you and tell you they've settled.
Okay. The salient part was you receive a document signed by both parties.
That's correct.
Do you pass that document on to the registrar?
That document itself, I do not, no.
Okay, so they don't know who the two parties are that you're satisfied are going to settle.
Well, they should, because they got a copy of the complaint, which has the complainant's contact information in it.
Okay, but we've heard before that in the case of privacy services and other cases where things are somewhat obscured, you may name several people as the respondent.
Right, as the respondent. But your question was how can we identify the complainant?
No.
In the complaint.
No. How can they identify the two parties who you are satisfied have the right to settle?
Right, and when we talk about respondent, the respondent is every entity listed as a respondent. I mean, there's only supposed to be one respondent in a case, and they may have multiple who is records because they've used different who is records, but. So it's any domain name in that case would be eligible for settlement. It's not like there should be multiple respondents in a case.
But you said in a privacy service, you will often or always, I don't know which, keep the privacy service and add the person who's being revealed. So you may have effectively...
Both could be listed in the complaint. Yeah, but it'll really depend on what the registrar does when they verify.
And whose signature... is it that you're looking for on the settlement agreement?
Anyone's.
Any of those?
Any name. And if it just says privacy service and the name is Joe Schmo, we take Joe Schmo.
I think we've just defined rat's nest.
Yes. It's very complicated. And the privacy services and the inaccurate who is information affects us and what we do every day very, very much.
Yeah, I know, but we can't fix that. I was just...
I was just throwing that out there.
One question, then I'll yield. Do we have many complaints that, with right now, the registrars are doing it? They may not be equipped for it, they may not want it, but they're doing it, you're telling us. Do we have any problems with it right now?
With the current...
I,
I'm not sure I'm asking you or the registrars or whatever. Do we end up with people messing up and doing the wrong thing? Or does somehow people feel out their way in the dark and it manages to work?
Well, to my knowledge, we have not had any problem and any reports of problems with fraudulent transfers or any problems like that. The biggest problem that we have seen is the occasional registrar. Like I said, once or twice a year, I'll get an email from a registrar that says, "What? Huh? I locked this domain name, and now you're telling me that there's some settlement. How am I? What am I supposed to do?" And then I just kind of handhold them through the process, and I say, "Well, you know, this is what could happen, and this is what you could do, and feel free to contact me if you have any questions." And then usually they don't, and then the settlement happens.
Okay, everybody, Matt, I'm afraid we've run out of time. It is now the top of the hour. Good to see that we're having a nice, albeit heated, discussion of various things. And let's try to continue this passion and energy on the list. Look forward to speaking to you all next week. And if anybody has any issues in the interim, please let us know. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you all. Have a good day. Operator, you can stop the recording, please.